First round. Are we good? Great. So this is actually a presentation that has never been given before. You're actually the first audience to receive it. So I look forward to your feedback as we're rolling it out. So my name is Sean Alexander. I'm a principal SDE, group SDE. So I manage a team in Redmond responsible for building the client and device experiences on top of Windows. Work very closely with my counterparts on the Azure side of the team as well. Because pretty much everything that we do nowadays that touches client touches the cloud. But today we're going to focus in on how you can take your existing Win32 apps, your existing kind of applications that you've built for Windows, and start migrating them to UWP using the desktop bridge. So just by a show of hands, how many of you here are familiar with the desktop bridge?
Define familiar.
Familiar, meaning have heard of it. Excellent. Okay, a couple hands. How many of you have heard of the codename Centennial? Okay, two more. So let me, that actually helps me with a baseline now. How many of you are building traditional WinForms apps today? Okay, and how many of you are looking for a way to be able to bring those over into UWP? Okay, outstanding, you're in the right place. So let's go ahead and get started. So just for a little bit of context, I've been with the company about 19 years. I started off in developer division and have worked on a number of different projects, including Silverlight and Xbox. And recently, a couple of years ago, returned to my developer roots. So I'm very excited about the direction that we're taking with UWP. Our team was responsible for helping to build the UWP platform, bring it over to Xbox, and now ensuring that all developers are able to take advantage of the SDK. So I just want to start off with, why did we build the Windows Desktop Bridge? When we built UWP, and when you have to go back to kind of the Windows 8.0 timeframe, we learned a lot since then in terms of kind of what developers are trying to do with the developer platform. And I think there's a tacit acknowledgement that there's a lot of traditional WinForm applications that were left behind to as we moved into kind of this tablet environment. And what we recognized with the desktop bridge is that there's a way for us to bridge these two worlds in a way that enables millions of desktop solutions to show up in the Windows Store, to be trusted by customers in both in corporations as well as consumers, and for us to do it in such a way that enables us to address a number of the user experience challenges that exist today. One of the questions I'm most often asked is, why do we build the Windows Store? Well, when we spoke with consumers, when we spoke with end users, we realized that there needed to be a trusted place that you could go to in order to download your applications. There's just too much malware out there. And we wanted to make sure that we could make it easier for developers to be able to monetize their offerings. And I'm not just talking about game developers. I'm talking about every developer who's building a solution. So as we look at the challenges that exist today, you have chain installers, which has been a big challenge, where malware and adware can be installed. And then doing a clean uninstall, managing the application package on uninstall has always been a challenge, particularly for those of us who have had to work in the IT pro space. As a software developer, a number of challenges also exist today. So the first, of course, is maintaining your installer. So there's a number of different solutions in terms of MSI packaging and your installer technology. And providing auto updates is a constant hassle. I mean, how many of you, show of hands, have dealt with auto updates and having to deal with updating your application and how to service? Yeah, number of hands. DLL hell. We've been talking about it for almost 20 years. We're still working on it, right? And then there's, of course, the question of modernization. So as you take your applications in UWP into XAML and start to take advantage of kind of the rich shaders and effects that are now possible, there's so much more that you can do visually with an application, but we still have our line of business applications, so traditional applications that we need to get over into the environment. So that's where the desktop bridge comes in. So the desktop bridge was built, and it was codenamed Centennial. It was announced at Build 2016, and it's really designed around and accelerating bringing your desktop application to the Universal Windows platform. And the way that we do that, the benefits, the key benefits, basically this is all coming directly from feedback that we've heard from developers such as yourself. We need to make sure that you can convert those desktop solutions quickly and distribute through the Windows Store so you have a trusted channel, that you can do it both publicly through the public Windows Store, or you can do it through the Windows Store for business so that you can go ahead and deploy to a smaller organization or group. You also have the ability to go ahead and reach over 350 million developers through Windows 10 and through the Windows Store. And as we started talking to developers, we started realizing that the more features that we added to Windows Store, and we're going to go through some of those today, such as app flighting, monetization, analytics. Those are key benefits that we want to make sure that your Win32 applications are not left behind. But one of the big problems that we heard as we were talking to developers about UWP is that it's a bridge too far, so to speak. It's too much work to be able to convert over all my XAML, convert over all my business logic, and get my entire application built on, basically rebuilt for UWP. So what the desktop bridge enables you to do is actually migrate at your own pace. You can go ahead and use traditional WinForms. You can go ahead and use your existing app logic. And then you can start to move to use new features that are available as a part of UWP and the UWP set of APIs. So today, we're going to do three things. The first thing we're going to do is we're going to convert our first app using the desktop bridge. Then what we're going to do is we're going to enhance that application by starting to take advantage of UWP APIs. And I'll show you how in about 5 minutes you can add things like live tiles, background tasks, and notifications. And the next thing we're going to do is we're going to talk about how you can enhance your application to go even further by moving more of your application logic and your presentation over into this new environment. And the one thing I'm going to do as we're going through is I'm going to let you know the gotchas. So this is a brand new technology. We blogged on it just about a month ago with the first unveiling of application partners that are already in store and using this technology. Notably, Evernote and the Arduino IDE are some pretty cool ones. I've been playing with Photoscape. But we expect that there will be millions of applications available built on top of the desktop bridge. We are fully committed to this technology and helping you to get your applications into the store. So let's start off with how does the desktop bridge work? So first thing to note is that this is not running in a virtualized environment, and it's not running in a sandbox environment. You actually have full trust inside of an application, and we'll talk about the implications there. But basically what you have is two different processes that run. All of your existing application logic will run inside of the desktop process. But what it will do is we spin up the app container process, which creates a container for UWP and for your application. So that enables your UWP app code, as you're extending and adding new features like live tiles and background tasks, to be able to interoperate and communicate with your own desktop processes. And the way that it does that is basically through IPC, or inter-process communication, using app service. Now, the beauty of this is that all of this happens underneath the hood, and you don't have to actively manage the relationship that exists between your application and the UWP set of APIs. But there are a couple of considerations that you need to take into account. Now, one of the reasons that we built the technology is to be able to go ahead and take your applications and merge them with UWP, but there are a couple of considerations to take into account. The first one is that file system management with the desktop bridge, all of your app packages are going to be installed to your default program files, Windows apps, and then your package name. And the reason for that is because we virtualize or create a snapshot of your registry, because we're not going to talk directly to the main registry. We're going to create a virtual environment for your application. We do the same thing for file system management. So what we do is when we package your application, we capture changes to app data, and we copy those on write to per user per app location, to a per app location under VFS, which stands for virtual file system. Now, the merging of the well-known file system folders also happens in real time. So that is a consideration to take into account, and we'll get into that here in a second. The other thing is, in terms of registry management, all of your converted app packages are going to capture all the registry changes into a single DAT file, which is the equivalent of your HKEY local machine software location. Now, important to note, all writes to current user are copy on written to private for per user per app location. So the implication here is that when you think about things such as administrative level privileges and NT services, you want to start moving those to background tasks first so that you're able to go ahead and particularly if you're talking to and storing information in the registry, you want to make sure that you're careful not to do that. Because all the writes are kept during the package upgrades, but at the same time, we are completely going to preserve the core registry and not make any changes directly to it. So as a result of the way that the desktop bridge works, a couple of considerations. The first one, as I just talked about, is you can't prompt for UAC or admin privileges in order to run your application. What we find is in most applications that's actually not an issue, because as a part of best development practices, folks are working inside of the app container, and they're working inside of your app logic as opposed to writing directly in requiring admin-level privileges. Second area, as I talked about, is NT services, and also drivers. Specifically, global drivers are not supported. We're working on drivers specifically at the app level so that you have, you know, a specific driver that you need to install for a specific app, it can go ahead and run inside of the container. The other is that your Visual C runtime. So we ask that you have version 11 or higher. So show of hands, anybody running under version 11? Okay, good. I was going to be concerned. And then .NET earlier than 4.6.1, we ask that you update for the current version that's available in anniversary update. So that's a key point here. Desktop Bridge is a brand new technology in Windows 10 anniversary update, and enables anybody running anniversary update to take advantage of these applications. So another thing to note is that we're exposing another COM object. Exposing another COM object works today, but that has to be in proc. So out of proc is something that we're working on, but we haven't publicly released. But that'll be available shortly. And the last thing that I just wanted to note here was, as we talked a little bit earlier, is that your rights to files and folders in the converted app packages are not allowed. And the reason for that is security. So once you create the app package, we're going to be very tightly bound in terms of that app package, making sure that you're not making any changes because we want to make sure that there's not malware or anything else being injected, because that application is running with full trust. So any changes that you make to files and folders need to happen outside of the converted app package. So in terms of the developer flow for Desktop Bridge, basically today what we're going to do is we're going to focus on three main areas. The first one is converting of your application. So the beauty of it is that we have three different ways of doing that, and I'm going to walk you through those. But we have a very handy tool in PowerShell that makes it very easy for you to be able to convert your applications. In fact, we're seeing the majority of apps, provided that you manage the caveats that I just showed on the previous slide, we'll just go ahead and convert, and we'll be ready for submission into the store. The second area is around enhancing your application. So now you've gone ahead and built your desktop app, and you've submitted it into the store. You want to go ahead and take advantage of those universal Windows platform APIs. Then over time, you can go ahead and extend your application even further by taking advantage of not just the APIs inside your application, but through inter-process communication, you actually build a UWP app, and you can have multiple apps talking to each other. And then ultimately migrating your app fully to the platform. So just to give you a sense, a couple weeks ago I was in Europe with a major partner. Can't say who they are, but it was a company that makes over 1.5 billion euros in revenue per year. And they have a very big business on Win32. I can tell you within 4 days, by the end of the second day, we completely converted over the two of their flagship applications. And by that point, we're going ahead and starting to add new features. And that's the key thing about the Desktop Bridge, is ultimately it's designed step one to get you into the store, but then step two to start taking advantage of those new features. You can do anything that a UWP app can do. It can take advantage of app services, background tasks, and triggers, and you can migrate your app to XAML. So the other key thing to note is the Desktop Bridge is very specifically referred to as the Desktop Bridge. It is designed for desktop applications. So if you have an application that you intend to deploy to Windows Phone, there are other technologies to use, such as UWP. You have to go native. But at this point, the Desktop Bridge is designed specifically for desktop applications. So let's get into converting your app. So we've been working very hard with the top three manufacturers of installer technology in order to make it easy for you to be able to repackage your application. And at the time that you're packaging your application, you can generate your MSI and generate your AppX at the same time. We also provide a desktop app converter, which is this PowerShell tool, which I'm going to show you here in a second, which makes it very easy for you to go ahead and convert. You also have the option of manual conversion. I wouldn't recommend this unless you're really comfortable with your code, because it is a laborious process, because you have to assemble the package and then the manifest and sign it yourself. Or you can use the UWP Packager extension in Visual Studio. But before you're ready to start off, I'm going to show you how you can use the desktop app converter and how easy it is. The first thing you got to do is got to make sure that your dev environment is set up. And the first thing you want to do is you want to make sure that you're up to date, so that you have Windows 10 Anniversary Edition. And we recommend that you have build 14.9.2.6 or greater installed on your system. We're going to be pushing updates out regularly for Desktop Bridge that will continue to add additional API coverage and additional capabilities, such as I just described with driver support. But the first thing you want to do is install the desktop SDK and the desktop app converter. The second thing you want to do is you have to get the corresponding base image. So if you go to aka.ms converter images, you can download a base image, which you're going to link inside of the desktop app converter the first time you run it. And at that point, you have basically all the resources that you need in order to run conversion against that version of the operating system. So using the desktop app converter itself is very simple. All you do is in PowerShell or directly in the shell, you can go to desktop app converter, and we have a couple of different flags. This is the base minimum number of flags that we recommend for setting up and establishing the base image version that you've downloaded that corresponds to your operating system version that you have installed currently. So rather than spending more time in slides, let's go directly to code, and I'll show you how it works. So the desktop app converter can be installed from the Windows Store. Just go up there, go ahead and install it. And then what it's going to do is go ahead and install the desktop app converter directly into your start menu. But what I've done here, just for convenience sake, is append it to my start. Now, it's important to note that you have to run the desktop app converter as administrator. The reason being, of course, that you have to have full access to the APIs and the file system. Because as the app converter is running, it's going to be keeping track of all the changes that you're making. Nope, looks like you guys aren't actually seeing what's on the screen here. Bear with me one second. All right, are you guys able to see that? Okay, that's a little bit better. Okay, so let me just walk you through. So this is on first run. It's gonna give you some basic setup instructions. The first step, which I just showed you, is you wanna go ahead and set up the desktop app converter by setting it up for the base image, and it's gonna go ahead and install the container system. Now the next step that you're gonna have to do is you're gonna reboot your machine. The next thing you're gonna do is you're actually going to run that same line again, and it's going to complete the setup. At that point, you're ready to go. So the next thing you want to do is you want to convert your installer for a desktop application. In this case, I have a very simple MSI. It's a basic Hello World type of sample. So what I'm going to do is go ahead and show you a couple of the additional flags that I recommend setting as you're installing your application. So the desktop app that I'm going to install, it's an MSI package. And all it's going to do is it's going to create a text file on the desktop, just to demonstrate that we're talking directly to the file system and able to go ahead and create files. But the thing that I do here is I'm going to go ahead and set the flag for the installer and point it at the MSI package. The next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to flag the destination folder. And into that folder, I'm going to get my apex. And depending upon whether or not I choose to use the sign flag, the certificate that I need in order to do local debugging against that application. So I went ahead and defined the package name. I also chose I want verbose debugging, so it's going to go ahead and give me verbose logging as I'm running the packager. And then I went ahead and used my own credentials for the publisher name. I could establish a package architecture, so in this case I know that my application was built for x86, so I'm going to go ahead and define that. And the last two flags that I put are make appx, and then I put sign. So just a show of hands, how many folks here are comfortable with sign packages and apex? Okay, a couple of you. So what I'll do is I'll go ahead and add in here, showing you how you go ahead and certify your app. Okay, so went ahead and started running this. Let me talk you through some of the things that are happening here. First thing it's going to do is check to make sure that the minimum versions of Windows are set. It's going to create a virtual network for any network calls. And the next thing it's going to do is set up the conversion environment. It's doing it in an isolated environment space. And then what it's going to do is start tracking, as your installer runs, all the file system changes that are happening and all the register changes that are happening, and starts logging those. So right now it's going to go through the known folder mapping process. And you may have seen earlier that it'll start running the container up at the top. So part of the reason why I'm using a very small MSI package for this demo is basically time. This can take a little bit of time if you have a very large and involved installer, but it gives you a pretty good sense of how it works. So the next thing it does is it prepares the virtual file system, and then it converts the registry, and it checks for any unsupported comma object usage. Last thing that we do is we go ahead and sign the apex package, and then there we're done. So we can see the four files have been created. I have my my cert, cert file is now available, my package, and my Apex. So let's go ahead and take a look at that. And take a look at how those files came out. So there we go. Okay, so here's the folder. So by the way, if you have multiple file types, multiple packages, it'll just go ahead and deprecate. One thing to note is when you're installing the certificate, let me move this over here. So the thing that you want to do is go ahead and install the local machine. Move that over. And it's important that you go ahead and you place all of your certificate stores in trusted people. Pretty straightforward. So once I do that, I can go ahead and install this Apex package, and I'll install just like any other app. So the import was successful. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and launch that package. And again, I could have put an icon in here. I could have added a lot of additional functionality. But you notice that here, the capabilities, it says it's going to run in full trust mode. So what goes ahead and installs the app package. I choose launch. And if you look at my application, you see it's just a traditional form. It's just a traditional WinForm. And if I go ahead and create a file on the desktop, you'll notice if I drag it over, there it is.
Does this support WPF apps as well?
It does. So the question is, does this support WPF apps? Yes. So the goal with Desktop Bridge was basically to support as much of your existing Win32 and existing apps, including WinForms, and WPF. The other thing that we also did was basically the team's highly responsive. So if you have an API that's not currently available, we're seeing code coverage at over 80-85%. But if you have one, outside of, as I talked about with NT services, I can't encourage you enough. Please stop using NT services. Get them into background tasks. It becomes a lot easier for you over time. So that was just the basic Apex. Now what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at how we can go ahead and extend out the applications. So let me go ahead and flip back here. Okay, as I mentioned before, three different manufacturers of installer technologies currently available. So you can go ahead and package up your MSI, and everything that I just did with the DAC, you can go ahead and do with those applications as well. So now that we've converted our app, one thing I did want to note is as we've been working with partners in order to convert over their apps, there's one error message that's been popping up from time to time. And what we're finding is oftentimes this is because of an issue with the MSI package itself. So I just wanted to give you a little bit of a tip and trick that we've been talking about internally, which is if you get this error message with you have a bad installer exit code, where the installer returned 10 when valid exit codes were 0, what you want to do is go ahead and run setup from elevated prompt, not from via the converter. And note the exit code, and if it failed, that's when you want to check the app and the operating system version to make sure that they're compatible. If it succeeded but with the error code, then what I want you to do is I want you to use the flag of installer valid exit codes when you run the installer so that we were able to go ahead and see the log file and see what the valid exit code error messages are. And as I mentioned before, one thing that we have seen some folks, particularly if you're not familiar with UWP and getting comfortable with the environment of certificates, go ahead, install Visual Studio, get your publisher certificate, and when you run sign, make sure that you add your debug certificate to the Trusted People store. So now we have our app. It's actually a UWP app, and we're going to talk about what that means here in a second, because I have the ability to go ahead and talk to the app container. But the first thing about publishing your application to Windows Store is that we really have two different stores. We have one which is focused on end users, and we have one which is focused on businesses. So what I want to encourage you to do is to take a look at the Windows Store for Business, particularly if you're supporting line of business applications. Because with the Windows Store for Business, you can go ahead and deploy your line of business apps and extend reach into your organization with one place and one set of tools all through the Developer Center. So the beauty of this is that it's very easy for you to go ahead and set a flag and then have basically within a corporate environment a single store that has all of your line of business applications, and it becomes much easier to maintain using the store technology. So publishing your app, whether it's for end user use or whether or not it's for corporate use, is pretty simple. The first thing you want to do is you want to go ahead and create your store account at dev.windows.com. The second step that you want to do is you want to go ahead and reserve an app name in the store. And the reason for this is because the applications that are built with the desktop bridge run with full trust, you need to go ahead and actually get an agreement with Microsoft to go ahead and put the application in the store. That's basically an indemnification because the store is the most trusted place to go for applications. You'll want to go ahead and submit your app to run full trust. So what I'll show you here in a second is a very simple form. We'll come back to you. We'll let you know if we have any questions about your application and your certification. But as a result of having done that, you get a number of new benefits. So the first of which is that we recently added package flighting as a capability into the store. So if you're interested in doing A/B testing, if you're interested in being able to run alphas and betas and actually flight your application versus sending it to everyone in your corporation or out to the public, you can do that using package flighting. So you'll upload the package, add the description of the artwork, the same as you would do any UWP application to publish. So when you publish your app in the Windows Store, you're going to have your app manifest. And in the XML, you're going to define that the capability is to run full trust. So when you submit your application, that's going to go ahead and flag inside of the Windows Store system that this application needs to go through individual review just to make sure that it's the most trusted application possible. A couple of other things that you notice that in the app ID, the entry point here is that you are a full trust application. You have full rights and measures inside the operating system. And you notice that under the target device family name, we flag specifically Windows Desktop. So you want to make sure that all three of these are flagged in your app manifest when you're packaging. But if you're using the Desktop App Converter or any of the MSI packagers I showed earlier, that's going to be taken care of for you. Submitting your app is very simple. So if you go directly up to the Developer Center and submit your app via Desktop Bridge, we want to capture some information about your company and then come back to you. Right now, that is a process whereby we send you basically an email and come back. But our expectation is that this is going to become much more automated, so you don't have to actually email back and forth with Microsoft, and that's going to happen pretty quickly. So once I've submitted my application, I've got it up. I'm right. Question? Great question. So I'll pay you later. The question was, so now that we've converted our app, how can we add UWP functionality, and how is that stored inside the system? So I'm actually going to walk you through that here just in a second. So the last point I wanted to make about store here is, why should you enhance your app? What we are finding is that developers are achieving about 10 times more revenue and 4 times the volume in terms of install gains when using 3 or more features. So those features may be using the live tiles and notification, using the ad platform, in-app purchase, or analytics. So it's a combination, and that's part of the reason that we're often asked, like, hey, why did Microsoft build the Windows Store? It's really to help you be successful with your application and build a tighter loop with your customer, whoever's running your application. So the monetization platform, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on today, but I did want to note that there's basically 2 models. We have a paid model where you can go ahead and support in-app purchase. So literally with 2 lines of code, you can go ahead and add in-app purchase capabilities to your existing Win32 application. But we also have an advertising model if that's of interest to you as well. Some of the applications that we're already seeing put into the store are taking advantage of trial as one of the additional features and starting to play with these different monetization models. Adding Windows Services Store to your existing application, now that I have Win32, is as simple as just calling using Windows Services Store. You set a couple of variables, and you're ready to go. So I talked a little bit about package flighting. So just show of hands, how many of you here are interested in being able to do app flighting and setting up alpha and beta tests? OK, a couple of you. So I'm going to go through this pretty quickly. So package flighting is pretty straightforward. In terms of the scenario, let's say that you already have an app in the Windows Store with about 7 million customers. And you want to be able to validate that your latest application fix works end-to-end without rolling it out to everyone. I mean, how many of us have been in a situation where we deploy an application but then have to do a rollback, and it gets very messy? I see a lot of smiles, a lot of head nods. So, you know, we want to make sure that you have confidence in the fix. So this is one of the top new features that was requested for Windows Store. It was added during, basically, we announced it at build, and it's been rolling out through August. So a couple of the benefits. One is that you have the concept of customer groups. I can choose customers in terms of who can see and acquire the application. So I can keep a new version completely hidden to public, but I also have the ability to go ahead and control what packages they can get. I can control it down to the flight that they receive, the specific device that's being targeted, but then also the ability to go ahead and create subgroups depending upon if I'm going after a specific audience based upon their Microsoft account email address. I also have the ability to go ahead and create specific flight rings for those who have opted in to an application beta group. So a couple of things to note about app flighting. You have the ability to fly to multiple groups simultaneously, but you want to package flights that contain only binary packages. And your app or game has to be published before you can create a package flight. So another reason for the Windows Store, and the reason why I'm talking about the Windows Store as being the first way to extend your app as a UWP, is because it gives you the ability to make data-informed decisions. By monitoring your app using the analytics APIs, and you're able to go ahead and use features like Power BI, there's the Power BI content pack, where you're able to get real-time analytics or near real-time analytics on your app. I have to tell you that within Microsoft, this has fundamentally shifted the way that we build apps and the way that we talk to customers. I basically, every month, when we sit down as an engineering leadership team, we spend all of our time in real-time data and virtually no time in PowerPoint. It's all done through Power BI. So I get rich and official visuals and powerful filters, but also ability to drill down very quickly into my data. So enabling Windows Store Analytics APIs is really simple. All you have to do is call, basically make a request to the URI. You'll notice that under application ID here, that's my unique identifier. And based upon that request, I'm going to go ahead and get a response back. So it's, you know, just XML with a series of attributes, which I can go ahead and now use as part of my analytics. So a couple things that are kind of interesting here. Obviously, we capture your OS and client, but we're also capturing things like gender and age group. So if you opt in to using Windows Store, you're going to get rich telemetry based upon who's actually using your application, and then you can go ahead and make customizations over time. So the analytics APIs, a couple of things here just in terms of app health. So a couple of things that you can do. So using the URI that you see listed here, I can go ahead and see all the crashes that are happening on tablets, grouped by failure name and package version, and aggregated by week. In another example, I can go ahead and see all the events that are happening for a specific package version because I know I'm having issues with that package, and I can see them grouped by event type, event name, and package name. And again, you'll get a response back like what you saw earlier. Okay, so with that, let's get into the gentleman's question about how we extend our application beyond the Windows Store. The first way that you do this is that, as I mentioned before, you're going to create an AppX, a universal app package that's going to have your classic Windows app, and then you can go ahead and start building on top of universal Windows APIs. So the most simple way to do this is to add a live tile to your desktop application. Live tile, you know, sits in the start menu, and it has the ability to go ahead and rotate, and we also have something called chaseable tiles, where you can provide real-time information that's coming either from the cloud or coming from the application, even when it's not running in state. So the way that we do that in terms of using live tiles and desktop apps is that I'm going to go ahead and call the Tile Update Manager. And basically, at this point, I'm now starting to use UWP APIs. But rather than doing this here in a slide, let me go ahead and launch Visual Studio. And let's take a look at that. OK. So by the way, all the demos I'm about to show you are up on GitHub. So if you're taking notes and trying to keep reference to it, just know that you can grab it later. So the first thing I want to show you is that this is Visual Studio 15 Preview 5 that I'm running here. So Visual Studio Preview, this is the new version, not to be confused with Visual Studio 2015. And one of the things that we've added in, so when you go into New Project, you're going to notice that under Other Project Types, Setup and Deployment, we have this new asset called Desktop to UWP Packaging Project. So I can go ahead and create a project that enables a classic Windows application to be packaged as a UWP. Enabling this is the first step to taking your existing Win32 app and converting it over to UWP. Once I do that, if you take a look at my my UWP app here, so this is a very simple solution. I have just a very simple win form. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to go ahead and set status on the app. But you'll notice here that I have this this additional item, which is called UWP Packager. So after running that the template in Visual Studio 15, it's going to go ahead and create a custom stub for the references, the assets, and the package file list right here. And at that point, any of my UWP assets, I just put inside the UWP Packager. But up here, I have all of my traditional app logic, my Win32 app logic that's running. So let's go ahead and take a look at how this runs. So I'll go ahead and hit F5 and debug it. Application is going to go ahead and launch. So there's my app. Basic status. No big deal. But you'll notice that if I go down here and look for my app package, so I have my desktop app, and I'm going to pin that to start. And you notice that now I have just the basic stub out. I can go ahead and add an icon. But now I'm ready to go ahead and convert that into a live tile. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead into my second step. Bear with me here. So here what I'm going to do is I'm just going to add a little bit of code that's going to enable me to go ahead and add updates to the live tile. So I have a static tile right now, and I want to turn this live. It's very simple for me to be able to go ahead and do this. All I have to do is update by calling the live tile. So you notice here that I'm going to go ahead and call the tile update manager. And if I hover over on it, you see now I have full access to UWP APIs. So this is a native UWP API for being able to do tile updates that I'm now calling inside of my application. So if I go ahead and hit F5 and run that app, it's going to go ahead and package it up. Okay, app's running here. So let me go ahead and remember again, it just installed that package. So let me go ahead and pin that to my start. Now I could have gone ahead and done that in the app package and automatically had it pinned to start. But let me go ahead and now change to be right back. And there you go. Sweet. I like that. All right. Cool. So that was pretty simple, huh? So let's take a look at another application, just real quick, to show you an example of another application that's running in the desktop bridge. So as I mentioned before, Evernote went ahead and launched a version of their application in the store. Show of hands, how many people here use Evernote? Okay, a few of you. So Evernote has already added in live tiles and notification support directly into their application. And they were able to do that in just a matter of minutes. I mean, literally. And at that point, it just becomes a question of how much functionality do you want to push into the live tile. I can go ahead and have rich graphics and layout inside the tile, and then notifications as a part of that. One of the other questions I often get asked about the desktop bridge is, what kind of performance hit are you going to see by moving into this new environment? We are seeing no performance hit that's measurable at this point. We have some very deep games that are actually using the desktop bridge, and we're seeing negligible, like no performance impact whatsoever. Because when you really look at what's happening behind the scenes, because we aren't doing virtualization, there's not a lot of overhead on the system. We're basically just keeping a shadow copy of your registry and your file system for any changes that you're making. So it really doesn't impact things such as system performance. Okay, so that's another quick example. Let's take this app a little bit further. So what we just did is we went ahead and added in live tile notifications. But that's only going to run if the app is running in the foreground. So the next step that we want to do is we want to add a background task that's going to enable the application to trigger based upon a predefined interval. Now, you can go ahead and do push notifications from services such as Azure Notification Service. Or in this case, what I'm going to do is I'm going to write just a little bit of code that's going to enable me to go ahead and take a time trigger, set it to 15 minutes, and then go ahead and push a notification using the background task, my background task call. So to do that, in the interest of time, I'm just going to go ahead and pull up the code. We'll take a look at that. So here we see again, I have my background tasks. I have my code for my background tasks. And you see that I've gone ahead and registered the background task, which is that timer trigger, right in my code. I'm setting application to enable visual styles, to set the compatible text rendering default to false, and then application run. So now if I go ahead and run this application, it's going to go ahead and build the package. It's the same app that we were running before. And you'll notice that nothing happens when I go ahead and click on my status. Now, I can go ahead and set a breakpoint, but for the interest of time, I think you guys trust that the code's actually running. But you'll notice that one of the things I'll do here is because 15 minutes is a long time to wait for seeing a notification, I'm just going to go ahead and use the lifecycle events and trigger that timer trigger. So, of course, the notification just popped up on the other screen. So you guys will have to trust me, but the notification just popped up. So that's very simple. We went ahead and added a background task. We recommend that you use background tasks for basically doing everything that you might need to do in terms of state, stateful information when the application is not loaded in memory or is loaded in memory. It's just a very easy way for you to be able to go ahead and start adding things like live tiles. Now, I did mention that feature called chaseable tiles. That's also new to Anniversary Edition. And I do encourage you to take a look at the UWP desktop toolkit, the community toolkit, which makes it really easy for you to add live tiles and notifications to your application. So let's go back to it, and let's continue to extend our application. So we added background tasks, but let's talk about some of the other ways that you might want to enhance your application. We've got live tiles, you've got notifications, and Cortana support. So if you want to add voice and text support directly through the Cortana SDK, you can go ahead and do that very easily. So some examples here that you see, I can go ahead and say, hey, Cortana, order me some food with Just Eat. You can say, hey, Cortana, create a station on Pandora. You can say, hey, Cortana, give me the latest sales updates for the last quarter. And then have that as an entry point into your application. And using that UWP, you can maintain all of your existing application logic. Your business logic can maintain inside of your Win32 code base. And you're just going to go ahead and call it out and then present it using these new APIs. So the last step is really going to be migrating your app. So at this point, you have your existing WinForms application, you have your traditional Win32 business logic. Now I want to start incorporating XAML directly into my application. This is when you start to kind of drain the lake in terms of your Win32 environment and moving purely to UWP. So in this demo, what I'm going to do is just show you a quick example of how that can be done. So again, all these code samples are available online on GitHub. But you'll notice that here, what I've done in my app package, I've removed all of my business logic and my XAML, and I've now moved that into my UWP. At this point, I can go ahead and remove my traditional Win32 app, and I can go ahead and move completely into UWP. So what are the benefits of doing that? We'll go ahead and launch the app. Give restore the packages. Give it a second here and install. And it looks like it's a very large app at this resolution. So here we just did this as a quick sample. So you can see that I now have image assets that are being built on top of XAML. I can go ahead and take advantage of composition and visual effects. And now if I go ahead and set any one of these, it'll go ahead and I have live tiles and notification support all built in. So very easy for you to be able to go ahead and start converting your application over in a short period of time. Any questions so far? Yeah, you should be able to go ahead and take anything from Visual Studio 2008. We're trying to get full code coverage for 2005 as well. If you run into an API that's not supported, email us, and we'll go ahead and take a look at it and respond. Like I said before, the areas that we find publishers are running into challenges are things like you're installing fonts or printer drivers at the global level because it requires admin-level privileges. And, of course, anytime you're dealing with drivers, you're really starting to get down to the metal. which is where trust starts to become a real concern. So I would say, again, send us feedback if you find something that's not working. But what we're finding is that very few issues outside of things like, I'll give you another example, one of the challenges that we ran into. It comes back to development practices. We had a partner who was writing to a state to a file inside of C program files. We had another one who was writing directly into the registry using admin level privileges. And we're just, no. So after spending a day of just cleaning up the code, you find that very quickly you can go ahead and get your app up and running. But at this point, what we've done here so far is we've gone ahead and converted our app, and we already have that modern deployment. We've already got full access to Windows Store and telemetry. We've got activation via live tiles, and I'm able to go ahead and even use file types and URI protocols. And then my app identity is now more accessible to UWP, and I have the UWP app model. So how can this help you grow your business? Well, the first way is through global distribution, obviously, with global payment methods. Show of hands, how many of you are doing direct monetization through your apps? Okay. A lot of line of business apps, right? Okay. Well, one of the top things that we've been asked for is the ability to support transactions and licensing directly through the UWP tool set and through the Windows Store. You get all that for free by using the desktop toolkit the desktop converter. But the other thing that we do is that you're going to be able to reduce the fragmentation of solution versions. So I touched just briefly on this, but I can't stress enough how much easier lives are going to be as a result of not having to deal with messy installation scenarios. We're actually doing a ton of work to make sure that we track absolutely everything that's happening during that installation. And we're going to be a little bit more restrictive in flagging if there's an issue, because we want to make sure that if you have to uninstall or you're doing a version over version update, that you get all the benefits that you get at UWP and none of the headaches that you have with Win32 and our previous environment with DLL help. So a couple other things I wanted to touch on here. The first one is just in terms of resources. We'll make sure you guys have the deck, and I made sure that these are deep links. The Windows Desktop Bridge is available in the developer portal. We took a look at the UWP packager in Visual Studio 15. Highly recommend that you take a look at the preview and start using it. It's kind of stubbed out. It doesn't have all the capabilities, but for all of us who have been dealing with extremely long installation times, it'll be a breath of fresh air, particularly as Win32 and UWP developers. Just the new installer alone was a sight to see. Notifications visualizer. I touched on this just briefly. Let me show this to you real quick. So the notifications visualizer is a really cool tool that a couple of our developers built that makes it really easy for you to be able to go ahead and create custom notifications using some of those features that I was just talking about, like live tiles and chaseable tiles. So with the notification visualizer, here you can see all the standard sizes for my tiles to pin to the start menu. And I can go ahead and take a look at different payloads. So we have some templates that are built in. It's all just expressed in XML. I can go ahead and see examples for calendar, for mail, and then this basically becomes a copy and paste exercise. So it can save you a lot of time if you're kind of doing one of those canonical examples. Here with weather, you see an example that's a little bit more visual. And then we do have the ability, if you're building a true UWP, if you've now converted your app, and now you're ready to make the leap into an app that's available across phone and even on Xbox, you do have the ability to go ahead and set this up here as well. But of course, that's really for desktop and phone. But here you can see an example for Xbox now that we've added UWP into the environment. So that's one tip and trick I give you. And here you can see that we can do rich notifications, achievements, et cetera. So that's one example of an enhancement that you can do. Another one that I wanted to talk just briefly about is the UWP Community Toolkit. Just by a show of hands, how many of you have heard of it? Okay, you guys work at Microsoft, you know. So a couple hands did go up. So the UWP Toolkit is up. It's an open source project that's available on GitHub, and the beauty of it is that it was incubated inside of the Windows development team, and now has more developers externally working on it than internally. That's exactly the way that we want to see it. It really generated a spark among the community. So let me go ahead and jump jump to a sample app that shows you some of the things that you can do with the UWP Community Toolkit. So the UWP Community Toolkit was designed to really address a number of the top areas of feedback from developers. Say, hey, I really want to create a rich visual animated application that's inviting, but come on, Microsoft, we need things like hamburger controls, you know, built directly into the platform. So what the team has done, and this is actually built using the UWP Community Toolkit, this is a sample app that you can get in the Windows Store, and you can get examples of the types of things that, and controls that are now built in. So the hamburger menu is a welcome addition. We have adaptive grid view, some more enhanced versions like a radial gauge and rotator tile. But when we get into notifications, particularly as you're really just getting started with UWP development, I highly encourage you to take a look at the samples that are available here. Because the libraries make it much easier for you to do things like live tiles and toast notifications directly inside of your app. Also, if you're calling third-party services, so this is another area of feedback that we heard is, hey, can you reduce the amount of lines of code I have to write in order to be able to call into Facebook service or be able to call in a Twitter to retrieve or publish data? So all those libraries and helpers are now available directly in the platform. The other thing that we did was there's a whole new set of composition and visual effects that are built into Windows 10 Anniversary Edition or Anniversary Update. And one of the things that we wanted to do is make it really easy for you to be able to go ahead and add those in. So being able to do fluid flow, being able to do like a scale and offset, doing blur and fade header, where you have a header. All of us have done this where you scroll up on a page and the header starts to compress as you're going through. These may seem like trivialities, but they actually do create a welcoming environment for an end user. And they're easy things for you to be able to go ahead and add as you're getting into UWP over time. So last two things I just wanted to call out. The first one is the GitHub. As I mentioned, on GitHub we have samples. Please give us feedback. Let us know. I provide some very basic samples here. I'll tell you right now, one of the first projects that my team did was we converted Quake 3. It's an open source project, and we said, okay, let's push it. Let's see if we can do it. And not only did we add Quake 3, but we were able to add, now, of course, it's an open source project, so we would not do this publicly, disclaimer. We actually got transactional support built in using Windows Store very quickly. We started messing around with subscription support. We had analytics up and running inside of the game title itself just by making some very basic calls. It makes for a very cool keynote demo. It's just, for the interest of time here, I wanted to make sure that you guys had, everything that you needed in order to get started with the desktop bridge. Last thing I just wanted to point out is that there's a great article up on MSDN. If you're interested in understanding more about how Desktop Bridge operates and what we've mapped when it comes to the file system and the registry, just go ahead and search for or click on the link when we send out the deck to Behind the Scenes with UWP Desktop Bridge. It goes into detail on all the calls that are currently available. And again, if you have questions about specific calls, let us know. Shoot me an email. I'm SeanAlex@Microsoft.com. I'm happy to go ahead and route your question and get it answered. So with that, I'd like to thank you for your time and open it up for questions. Looks like we have about five minutes for questions.
So when we convert any Windows application, Win32 application completely for UDP, how much of the WinForms designer code is converted to Xamarin code?
Okay, so the question is, when you're converting your application from WinForms to XAML, to UWP, how much of the UI, the form layers, is converted? The answer is you still have to do that. There's different tools that you can find for helping with the conversion, but that's one of the big pieces of feedback that we heard from developers is that, hey, I'm already really invested in WinForms. Don't make me have to rewrite everything all over again. And the reality is that XAML is just so rich and different from what WinForms does that rather than do a half-assed job of trying to convert everything over, we said, hey, we're going to put the tool set in your hands and make it easier for you to get your app logic over first.
And
Yeah, so the question is, do you need to have an MSI package or can you do a .exe? Yes, so we find in the majority of the cases, if you're not doing anything bad as a part of your install, you can go ahead and do the .exe. I'll tell you again, the areas that you're gonna run into issues. If you have a installer launcher, I mean, we all see these, right? It's that very small 300K file. Oh, great, it's a quick download to install. And then it calls out to a service in order to actually payload the full installer. That's not going to work. You need to actually have the installer, payloaded as a part of that .exe package. So that's the first area. And then if we run into issues, like I said before, if we see that you're trying to install an NT service or talking, directly into the registry in some of those areas, we're going to set a flag and warn you. You got to make those code changes. Question is, can my app, my internal app, continue to access SQL? Absolutely. Yeah, you can absolutely do that. I'll give you another example. So, in fact, just since we have a few minutes here, let me go ahead and show you another kind of cool app. So, I mentioned the Arduino IDE is now available in the store. Are there any makers in the community? Like, being able to hack on Arduino is just awesome. So, this is the actual Arduino app, and it was a very simple conversion and now available. Now, the question was on, hey, if I'm talking through the network layer to SQL Server, et cetera, can I still do that? When I first ran this, I got the Java prompt for firewall permissions. It's the same as any other application. I'm running with full trust. So that's part of the reason why we have to be very careful about which apps go into the store. We want to make sure that we have trusted applications available in the store. Another example that I'll just show you quickly, since we do have a few minutes here. So this is one of my favorite apps. So that as an example, let me just go ahead and resize that here a little bit. I was not planning on showing this, so now I have a little bit of explaining to do about those photos. There we go. So here you can see an app that's starting to convert over to XAML. So this is a Photoscape X Pro. Here I can go ahead and have my traditional file system dialog. And here I can go ahead and edit apps, but you see at the top they're starting to implement some XAML. So I don't know how many folks here are NFL football fans, but we had a difficult tie last week with the Seattle Seahawks. By the way, this is actually my wife on the right in Antarctica last week. So she's a pilot for the Air Force and flying there from the National Science Foundation, so I flew out from Christchurch earlier today. This was my vacation, but I wanted to come in because I was so excited to present. So this is, again, a very quick app that was able to get converted and now is available in the store. Any other questions? So the question is, can you do a WinForm inside of a XAML container in order to get a partial conversion? I don't know. I haven't tried that. That's a good question. Now I have to go back and try that. I can't think of any reason why you wouldn't. Real quick. I do know that if you're doing web-wrapped apps, for example, we're going to use the Edge container, so we'll use the Edge engine. But you can go ahead and have a combination of Win32, XAML, and HTML5 in your app. Oh, actually, sorry, one second. I think the gentleman over here in the fox shirt had a question. Yeah, so the question is, can you install applications like within your corporation without using Windows Store? Absolutely. So the AppX package, you can go ahead and sideload and install on those desktop PCs without issue. You aren't required to use Windows Store. It's entirely up to you. Cool. Gentlemen over here, another question? Yes, so the question is, if I'm building a WPF app, is this going to make it easier for me to get to UWP over time? Absolutely. So step one is you want to go ahead and load your project inside of Visual Studio 15, and you want to add that new package that I showed earlier. Let me just show that again. real quick. So I'm showing it again because it can be a little bit difficult to find. So when you go into a new project, it's under other project types, setup and deployment. You want to add the desktop to UWP packaging project. And then at that point, it can go ahead and call into your app container for any of your Win32 code. And your Win32 code can call into any of the UWP native APIs that are supported through the packaging project, which is the majority of them. And our plan is over time to get all of them outside of a couple of edge cases like I talked about. Cool. All right, and with that, we're at time. I'd like to thank you for your time, and I'm happy to stick around if you have any questions. Again, my email address is seanalex@microsoft.com, and look forward to your feedback on how we can improve the tool over time. Thanks.